All right, so I sent out a message, not on Tuesday, like I anticipated. Didn't get it out till last night late. Sorry, just had a crazy, crazy day. But I remembered to do it, so that's a good thing. I sent out the questions that I want you to research for your next extra credit assignment, and that is on the legislature. Let me see. All right, there are three sections to this. You don't have to write complete sentences. A lot of these you can just answer in a couple of words, two or three. So what I want you to do is I want you once again to go back to the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. You can find it on our state government's website, mass.gov. And what I want you to do is you're going to go to Chapter 1, Section 1, Part of the Second. Part of the Second is the frame of government. And that's obviously where what the government is supposed to do is can be found. So what I want you to do is, for Section 1, Chapter 1, Section 1, I want you to answer these seven questions. What are the names of each branch that make up the general court? We've actually covered it a bunch of times. You should be able to whip that out of your head real quick. The Constitution tells us, why are there two branches within the general court? How does a bill become a law according to the Constitution? What happens if the bill is objected to in its current form? In other words, when it leaves the general court, what happens? It actually lays it out in Chapter 1, Section 1. If the bill is objected to, can the general court do anything about it? What role does the general court have in the creation of the courts and the power of each court? The Constitution tells us. And then there's a whole section that says the types of laws. Just pick five. And again, as I said, don't have to answer in complete sentences on these if you don't want to. Just want to do little bullet points, that's fine. Second section. Chapter 1, Section 2, part of the second. This section pertains to the Senate. According to the, oh, by the way, like I have in the, here, don't look for the amendments. I want the pre-amended sections. So, how many people make up the Senate? What are the requirements established in the Constitution to vote in senatorial elections? What's the length of a senatorial term? Again, unamended Constitution. What are the qualifications to run for the Senate? Who's the chief officer in the Senate? What's that position called? What role does the Senate play in the impeachment process? And what power does the Senate have over its members? Again, it seems like there's a lot of questions on each of these one, two, three, four words. Shouldn't take you that long. Again, don't bother writing it down. I did send you the email. Because I'm going to click and it's going to go woof again. And then the last section, skip ahead to Chapter 1, Section 3. This deals with the House of Representatives. According to the pre-amended Constitution, what are the metrics of number of representatives that each town is entitled to? What are the requirements? Oh, that should be a House. Typo. That should be to vote in the House elections. I have to change that. What is the length of a House term? What are the qualifications to run for the House? Who's the chief officer? See, redundancy. What role does the House play in the impeachment process? The only thing that's different in the preceding section, there's one power, one specific power, bless you, that's given to the House and not the Senate. What is it? And lastly, what power does the House have over its members? I would like you to have this done by Tuesday. So you got 4 days to get it done. And again, I'm going to treat this like I did the homework, which I realized as I was in my truck racing here, I left it on my desk. And by the way, I graded everyone's. Everyone got full credit. Those were done nicely. I was very happy with what I received. This will be the same thing. It will be treated as extra credit. So if you choose not to do it, you will not be penalized. But obviously, it will work to your advantage because I picked all those questions because we're going to be talking about them. The other thing I have to drop at you is that once we get through the legislative stuff, which will probably be Tuesday, we're ready for our next exam. Because like I told you at the beginning of the semester, I don't do cumulative exams, I do sectional exams. And I think three sections, that's more than enough. I don't want to bog you down. So if you miss some classes, be it you didn't watch the video or videos because it's snow day, I don't remember if you had more than one, those are still available. You can find it in your email or the audio recordings, which are on my website. All right, any questions on this? Again, I did send it out as an announcement, so you can find it in the announcement section of Blackboard, but I also clicked the button, so it should have gone to your email box as well. All right. The legislature. So what we need to do is we need to look at the legislature in general, as well as what makes the legislature in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, our aforementioned general court, so truly unique. And I just need to pull it up because I do not have the hard copy of my notes in my binder. Why? Don't know. Actually, truth be told, it goes down to a simple fact. If you're going to get a job, get a job. Don't work multiple jobs. Because if you work multiple jobs, you lose track of everything. There we go, Legislature General Court. Alrighty. As we know, thanks to the historical developments in what would become the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, one of the most important aspects of our political system that was borrowed from Massachusetts, utilized in other states as well as the United States government, is the separation of powers. Why do we have the separation of powers? What is the reason that you take the power of government and you break it into separate branches? Why would you try to limit the power of government over your lives to begin with? What can government do to you? It takes. It could destroy. It could punish. It could harm. So the whole reason why we have constitutions is to limit the power of government to do that. So then why would you want to take the power that the government has and divide it? Well, it's kind of boring, but it's straightforward. Checks and balances. If you take the power of government to make law, to enforce law, to punish under the law, and you divide them into separate branches, you can prevent tyranny. You could prevent a group of madmen from getting in power and basically using the power of government to destroy the population. That's why they did it in Massachusetts. And by the way, once it was done in Massachusetts Bay, there would be writers that would reference it, talk about it. And then during the whole 18th century, the 1700s, during, I don't know if you ever learned about the Enlightenment, there's a whole bunch of political scientists, people like John Locke and Montesquieu and a whole bunch of others. And they talked about the need to separate the power of government. It goes back to what we did in Massachusetts.
So, legislature. The legislature is what? Primarily, therefore.
Thank you. What was the job of the legislature?
Well,
it's the lawmaking branch. But is it just that? Rhetorically, the answer is no. If you can take the power of making law and put it in a separate branch and fill that branch with representatives of the people who will make laws in the people's interest, you have a good chance that the laws will be good, that the laws will be decent.
But when you look around the country, the state legislatures and even Congress, they don't just make laws, they actually do other things. In fact, as your book tells you on page 113 or 14 or 15, I don't remember exactly where it is, but I know it's in the low hundreds, the legislative section. It tells us, in fact, that most legislatures actually have three functions. There's three primary jobs that they do. Yes, they do make laws. But in making laws, what they're doing is they're making policy. You know, they're telling the government how it should run based on what the people want. They also serve as representation. You know, we send them there to do our bidding, to work on our behalf, to represent our interests. As taxpayers, as residents, their constituency. And of course, believe it or not, they're also supposed to engage in oversight. They're supposed to make sure that all of the government agencies that are created by law are doing their job.
All right, let's break each one down, starting with policymaking.
One of the most important functions of a legislature in a republic is articulating how things should work. They do so by making what loosely we refer to as laws. But more precisely, they're referred to as statutes. Not statues.
Not statues, but statutes with an extra T.
A statute is a rule of behavior that comes from the legislative branch. It basically is telling people, to be Old Testament-ishy, the thou shalls and the thou shall nots. A statute tells you what you are allowed to do and what you are not. And if you violate a statute, you basically committed a crime. And there could be consequences.
So, for instance, there is a statute on the books that gives the municipalities the power to set speed limits locally. So the city of Worcester decided last year, or maybe late 2024, that we need to slow traffic down in Worcester. So because the general court gave the city of Worcester the authority to do so, they passed an ordinance that lowered the speed limit on all roads, unless posted otherwise, to 25 miles an hour. So the legislature said, thou shalt. They empowered the city of Worcester to make that decision. Worcester made that decision, and now what happens if you go against the decision that was made by the city of Worcester and drive faster than 25 miles an hour? What could happen to you?
You could be caught.
Caught, and then?
Then they'd ticket you?
Yeah, you get punished. Absolutely. Why? Well, because under the city ordinances, they said, thou shalt not. Thou shalt not drive faster than 25.
Yeah, people still drive more than 25.
Exactly, because you can't.
I live on Lincoln Street, so I know.
Yeah, you can't enforce it. It's unenforceable.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But what that was a feel-good measure.
Yeah.
All right. So, statutes. This law comes from the legislature. Again, thou shalt, thou shalt not. They empower behavior, but they also ban or penalize other behaviors. Now, as we know, in Massachusetts, because we covered it at the end of last class, and the same is true in other states, not only can the legislature make statutes, but in many states, the legislature can make new constitutions. Again, two classes ago, I quickly went through the list. You know, we're the only one out of the original 13 states that's still operating under our original. Why? Well, because we have an amendment process. Well, other states give the legislature the power to say, well, the Constitution's not working, so let's rip it up and we'll make a new one. And of course, all legislatures have the power to propose amendments. Now, how they get enacted, every single state and even the U.S. government is different. And we saw how what happens in Massachusetts. It could be up to a 6-year process. Two votes by the general court, vote by the people, approval by the Secretary of State. Legislatures also have to pass laws, statutes, pertaining to anything involving money. The power of the purse.
Power of the purse, as it's referred to,
has, in the English common law system and tradition, been held by the legislative body all the way back to 1215, when King John and his forces were defeated by the armies of the English barons. And King John was forced at literal sword point to sign the Magna Carta, to give the power of the purse to Parliament. That tradition's over 800 years old. Well, that was embedded into our system. Anything that involves collecting, taxing, or spending must be done through a statute. A spending bill is the same as any other bill,
but it has to go through the legislative process for it to be valid.
To be more precise, taxes are the input, and appropriations are the output.
Since government can only legally spend money
that the legislature appropriates. So I'll give you a local example as opposed to a state example. So the legislative body in most towns is town meeting. So let's say there's a proposal for a new school building, or a new police station, or a new fire station. Well, that decision is made by the voters in town meeting. If they vote to build the building, what they're doing is they're voting for the designation of money to complete the project. Because you can't build anything if you have no money. Now, of course, how do towns get money to build buildings? Well, they have to borrow it. But what the legislative branch at the town level is doing is they're voting to have the town go borrow the money to build the project. And they're also agreeing to pay for it through an increase in their taxes.
Same thing happens at the state level. Same thing happens at the national level. Questions?
Well, in addition to making policy, making the thou shalls, thou shall nots, making sure the frame of government works, make sure they're spending money properly, they're also supposed to represent someone, something.
You know, we don't have nobles. We have people that we choose to go to government to make decisions on our behalf.
In Massachusetts, that came about early on after the revolt of 1634. Thank you. When members of the general court were angry at what Winthrop and others were doing. They were keeping the charter secret. They were saying they could make all the laws. Well, the people got mad. So they forced Winthrop to agree that instead of having everybody go, no democracy here, no pure democracy where every freeman could vote, there's too many people are traveling too far. So instead every town was allowed to select two people from every town and go to the general court and represent the town.
Well, this idea still rings true.
The job of our legislators is to be our representatives in those bodies. So for your town or city, well, if you're a town, chances are it depends upon where in your town you live, but in Massachusetts you have a representative who may represent not just your town, but other towns or parts of other towns. Or if you live in Worcester, Worcester has several representatives, so they only have like a part of Worcester. You also have a senator. Senator represents multiple towns, but you at least get two. And the men and women who go serve those roles are supposed to represent the communities that send them there, their constituencies.
Why? Well, we have, what,
7 million people, give or take, that live in Massachusetts? Could you imagine if you tried getting 7 million people into a building and have them vote on things?
Yeah,
it just wouldn't work. When my kids were home, there was 4 of us, we couldn't even agree what we wanted to eat, what we wanted to watch on TV. Hard enough with, like, heck, now it's just me and my wife, and we still can't even agree. But 7 million, it wouldn't work. So it was based on the notion that you pick, but the trick is, when you send them up there, who are they representing?
John Adams once said, famously, and of course my screen went black, "The greatest care should be employed in constituting this representative assembly. It should be in miniature, an exact portrait of the people at large. It should think, feel, reason, and act like them. That it may be the interest of this assembly to do strict justice at all times, it should be an equal representation. Or in other words, equal interest among the people should have an equal interest in it."
If you send them there, they should represent their entire constituency. But do they?
But do they?
Here's the catch. At the state level and at the national level, we have partisan elections. We have partisan elections, meaning people vote for candidates often based on the party of which they are members.
So,
if you are a Democrat running for office, chances are the Republicans are not going to vote for you. Or vice versa. So if you're a Democrat and you win the election and you go to office, the Democrats are the ones responsible for keeping you in that fluff, no real hard work job that pays six figures. So if you go up there, are you going to do the bidding of the Republicans? Or are you going to only do the Democrats?
Or what happens if you have certain biases?
You know, what happens if you are, say, a Muslim, and maybe you're not a fan of people of the Jewish faith, and it's the Muslims who voted for you? Should you ignore the interests of the Jews, the Christians?
Or what happens if you run in a district made up of multiple towns
and you lose three of the five towns, but the two towns you won had the most people, so you won anyways? Do you only represent the towns that you won? And then what happens if the people are clamoring for something that you know is going to be harmful? Do you ignore the will of the people because you think they're dumb? These are all questions which one cannot answer unless you serve in the office. One of the most infuriating things, at least for me, is that when I sit back and I see something going on that is not good for all kinds of people, and that the people that we put there play the partisan game. Oh, we're not going to vote for it because it's a Republican idea. Or we're not going to vote for it because it's a Democrat idea. If the idea is good for the common good, shouldn't that be their focus? But again, look at the shenanigans that are going on in Washington, D.C. The Democrats are mad about who knows what in the Senate. They're refusing to fund the TSA. They're refusing to fund the Coast Guard. They got the partial government shutdown. Why? You know what TSA does? TSA protects our airports. You know what the Coast Guard does? The Coast Guard protects our coasts. You got men and women in harm's way that are not getting paid because the Democrats are mad at the Republicans. And like, there's no common ground. It's infuriating. And then it causes many people to lose faith in our system. Well, what's the point of me voting? If I vote for a person and they make all these promises and when they get there, they don't do what they promise.
It's not easy. There's no clear solution. So I'll give you an example.
Let me give you the example. So my state senator, he is the senator for a good chunk of southern Worcester County. His name's Ryan Fatman. I've known Ryan for many, many, many years because I first met him when I was up on my roof. I was working on a project up on the top of my house, and this young kid just out of high school comes into my yard and starts asking me to vote for him to be a selectman in town. Engaged him in conversation, and I've been friends with him ever since because he impressed me. He is a Republican. He is a Republican. But he has never once embraced the Republican line. He's gone against his own party. He's gone against his own leadership. He's also gone against the Democrats and their leadership because he's always trying to serve the common good. Those types of individuals are rare. Because what you see when you get these men and women in the legislature is that they'll bend the knee to leadership. If they bend the knee to the leaders of their party, they'll get better committee assignments. They'll get extra perks. They'll get extra money in their paycheck. And they'll be able to put what we're going to talk about soon called pork. When they put money in all these spending bills that they can bring home to their towns and their cities that they represent.
It's a game. And it's not a fun game. So when you see them on TV and they're talking, and they're speaking from their talking points, sit back. Again, don't focus on the D or the R. Don't fall into that game. Listen to what they're saying and then ask yourself, who does that help? Does that help me? Because ultimately, that's what we want, right? We want to put men and women up there. They're going to help. They can't help everybody. But they should help most. The common good. Questions?
All right, the third power or function of the legislature is oversight.
Oversight. As I said in my little cheesy intro, oversight means investigation. Once the legislature makes a law that creates a government agency to provide a service, and they fund it, it's the job of the legislature to make sure that agency is doing what it's supposed to do. If the agency isn't doing what it's supposed to do, it's wasting taxpayer money. And the job of our legislature is not to waste taxpayer money. Because whose money is the taxpayer money? I know Dana has a job. I saw her working. Do you all have jobs? And what happens before you get your paycheck? Every pay cycle. Who gets their taste of it first?
Government.
You're the one who's working. But the government takes your money, your hard-earned money. Now, obviously, the Constitution, as we know, because many of you referenced it in your homework assignment, you know, it says in the Constitution we have a duty to pay taxes. But we don't have a duty for the government to rip us off and to waste our money. Our taxes are supposed to serve the common good of the community. Well, it's their job to make sure that our taxpayer money is not wasted. So what do? They hold hearings. They bring in members of the community. Because maybe there have been members of the community that have been harmed by government agencies. Or maybe there's members of the community that think we need a new agency because they're suffering and we need some type of solution. Or maybe there's a whistleblower that's reporting on fraud and waste and abuse. These hearings are open to the public. I've actually participated in several. I've gone in and I've spoke before legislative committees. I actually got my own law passed. In the town of Sutton, if you are a homeowner and you are a member of the armed forces, whatever branch, including Space Force, and you get called to active duty out of the country, during your deployment, you will not have to pay property taxes in Sutton. You can file for an abatement. It took me 5 years to get that passed. It was a pain in the ass. But I was determined. I was not going to surrender. Well, I actually had to go. I had my talking points. Went before a joint session. There were members of the House and the Senate there. And I had to talk on why I put the bill through town meeting. I reported on the fact that town meeting 2 times voted for it unanimously. And they talked about, you know, the benefit. The history of Massachusetts and my town, the Sun, how we've always supported the military. And in the end, don't know what happened after the first time I went up there, but the second time my testimony must have been persuasive because I managed to get bipartisan support for the bill. It was passed. Right. You have the ability to go and sit in the audience to listen or to participate. Many of the Massachusetts committee hearings are not necessarily televised. Sometimes they're on like PBS. Sometimes they have the House or the General Court's video service that broadcasts it on the internet. But many of them are not. But you have the ability to go and watch. Congress, many of the congressional hearings are on TV, on the C-SPANs. And basically it's doing the same thing. They are gathering information. They're hearing from the public. They're hearing concerns. Because what they're supposed to do is they're supposed to take these concerns and fix the problem through legislation. Who do they call in? Well, oftentimes they pull in representatives of the executive branch. All of the alphabet agencies. Last week, I'll give you a national one because I've got to guess that most of you probably have little to no understanding what goes on being in hell. But maybe on your Twitter feed or your X feed or your Insta Snap, whatever you use, you saw last week Kristi Noem, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, got called before Congress and had committee hearing, and they excoriated her, and they exposed the fact that she used taxpayer money to get private jets so she could do rolls in the hay with an underling cheating on her husband. I know
don't care that I'm a Republican and Kristi Noem's a Republican and Trump's a Republican. You had the Secretary of Homeland Security wasting taxpayers' money so she could have a tryst. Well, as a result of that committee hearing, the very next day, she resigned. She was out. Why? Because Trump was going to fire her. Because Trump has been all about DOGE and getting rid of corruption and waste. And now he had a member of his staff engaging in corruption and waste. See, like I said, the D or the R shouldn't matter. You don't want anyone doing that kind of stuff because it's our money. Well, because of that hearing, because of the finger wagging, change happened. That's what it's supposed to be.
Because the legislature, through checks and balances, has a responsibility to make sure that the executive branch does what it's supposed to do.
And by the way, if the legislature discovers that agents of the executive branch are not doing what they're supposed to do, they can shut down that agency. They can pull the funding. They can make it go away. Because the one thing that any government agency should not be doing ever is abusing the people. And again, I don't care if it's the D's in charge or the R's. No waste, no fraud, no abuse.
Because that's what they're supposed to do. Questions? All right, a little history, and then I'm going to call it a little short today, because again, I sent out the email for the next homework assignment, so I want you to get on that for next Tuesday. All right, as we know, our legislature here is the General Court. It's the same name that was applied to that first group of freemen that came over with Governor Winthrop in 1629. General Court. It is the oldest elected bicameral legislative body in these United States of America. It has operated, with few periods of exception, like when King Charles II, nullified our charter. And also during the Revolution, when the Massachusetts Government Act suspended, our second charter, provincial charter. But with those two exceptions, our General Court has been operating pretty much on nonstop since 1629. Again, it's older than the United States government, which is only 250 years old. If you go by when the Declaration of Independence was passed, which is what we're going to do this July 4th. Now, by the way, I should also throw in there that our legislature is one of only 10 full-time legislatures in our country. There are 50 states, 40 of them are part-time legislative bodies. What does that mean? Well, our legislature is always open. They're always doing stuff. But what stuff are they doing? That's a rhetorical question that we cannot answer right now. But I'll leave that up to you.
All right, we know. First General Court met in London, 1629. First session over here was in 1630 in Boston. We also know that since the revolt of 1634, when Winthrop was discovered by the freemen to not be running the government like the charter said,
and he was forced to accept the creation of a representative government. When instead of having a democracy, town sent representatives to make decisions on their needs.
And we also know that 1644,
after the Bodies of Liberties was passed in 1641, and the towns had the ability to make proposed amendments to the system of laws that was in the common law, actually it was the Massachusetts Bay. The only major change that came out of it is when they created bicameralism. When the Court of Assistants became the upper branch to advise the House of Deputies on how to make proper law.
I literally just all said that. It worked up until it was revoked by Charles II.
Of course, we covered this already. James II, when Massachusetts had no charter, decided to merge together New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New Hampshire into one grand colony, the Dominion.
It was a royal colony controlled by Edmund Amos, like a tyrant, a dictator. And we know, thanks to the Glorious Revolution, that peaceful coup d'etat, where James II was dethroned and replaced with William and Mary, the new co-sovereigns granted us a new charter, a provincial charter. And under that charter, Plymouth Colony and Massachusetts were merged. This is redundant. I already covered this stuff too. General courts dissolved by Governor Gage. We did that. We know that during the time of rebellion, there was the Provincial Congress. We know that after the Constitution was ratified, the Provincial Congress, those radicals working up in Salem, helped draft the Constitution, and then the new Constitution was enacted, giving us the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. All right. Questions. I'm going to skip ahead in the notes because we want to fill up the class, but I don't want to go into that because that's going to bleed into your homework assignment. All right. All right, I guess I'll do this one. All right. Bear with me. We'll go to the legislative process. We'll talk about the makeup of both charters. We'll talk about all the committees. We'll do that all on Tuesday. Let's talk about the old-fashioned how a bill becomes a law. And it's somewhat similar to Schoolhouse Rocks. Although that's talking about Congress. I'm just a bill, an ordinary bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. But when I'm going to stop singing, because I was a bass player and I never was a singer, so I'm not going to blow your eardrums out with my awful voice. All right, Massachusetts. Massachusetts is a very interesting process in that in order for a statute to be created, it has to come from what's called a bill, but the bill must come from a petition. Any registered voter, be they man, be they a woman, regardless of race, religion, color, or creed, only catches that to be a registered voter, can petition the legislature to make a law. I did. You could. you wanted to. It literally says it
in our Constitution. Any citizen
has the ability. Well, citizen of Massachusetts. Any citizen or group of citizens may petition the general court for legislation on any subject.
This includes members of the general court. Because obviously, to be a member of the general court, you have to be a citizen.
This also includes, believe it or not, any state officer.
The governor, the lieutenant governor, the auditor, the state secretary of state, any person, regardless of their position, has the right to petition the legislature
for a law. But here's the catch. If it's not coming from a member of the general court, you have to get a member to endorse it. Although technically they refer to it as sponsoring. You also have to get a member of both chambers. So if you know your representative, you can talk to them and petition them, but then the representative has to get a senator to get on board. So how did I get my bill to become a law? I talked to both my representative, Joe McKenna, and I talked to my senator, Ryan Fatten. And I got them both to endorse my proposal. Well, once they endorse it, it actually has to be presented.
It has to be presented.
And it has to be recommended. Which basically means there has to be the powers that be that feel that there's a need for the law.
Because we're not going to waste the people's money. So for instance, if you wanted to get a law passed in Massachusetts where there was a declaration that the sky is blue on a sunny day, chances are the powers that be in the general court are not going to recommend that because it's kind of like, no duh. So why are we going to waste money on having hearings and getting public comment and all this stuff when all you got to do is look out the window? And here's the other interesting thing. Bills can come from, or proposals, petitions, could go to either chamber. So if you wanted to start at the Senate, you could do that. Unless money's involved. Oh man, I'm going to give you a spoiler on one of the questions that's in the third part of the homework. Anything dealing with revenue may not start in the Senate. There's my subtle spoiler.
Why? Because that's what the Constitution says. All right, so once you write the petition, it could come from any citizen, could come from members, could come from government officials, whatever. You got to get one member to at least endorse it, and you got to get an endorsement from both chambers. If you can get at least one senator and one representative to get behind the bill, then the official process begins.
And by the way, this grid that I'm going to show you is on my website. It's viewable.
You ready for this? Here comes the picture. Here you go. Here's how a bill becomes a law. All right, I'm done. No, I'm kidding.
Look at all those steps. Yeah, yeah.
All right. So here we go.
We are going to follow the solid line path, because that, we're going to say, is a bill that starts in the Senate. We'll talk about them both. The dotted line is a bill that the petition initially went to the House. All right. So the petition comes in. Okay? The petition comes in. Citizen wants a law to recognize someone famous, Steve Tyler and Aerosmith. It's a Boston-based band or a Massachusetts band, for their 50 years of playing music. We want to have an Aerosmith Day. We want to name Aerosmith as the official band of Massachusetts. So the petition comes in. In order for it to proceed, and we're going to talk about the committees next class, the Rules Committee must recognize the need for such a law. These are the committees that make this decision. We need this. It's impractical. If the Rules Committee does, what they will do is they'll make the rules for the bill. The rules for the bill are the process it must follow, the timeline that it must make it through the process, and any other required necessary steps along the way. So it's not the rule of the legislative process, it's the rule for that particular bill. Again, I'll be more specific when we come back. Senate bill. Once the Rules Committee puts the rules on it, the bill goes to the Senate, because it originated in the Senate. The Senate, once they receive it, must send a copy to the House to make sure that the House is on board. Because the only way you can have a law is if both chambers pass bills. If the House doesn't want the Senate bill, it's dead. But if the House endorses it, the committee meetings begin. Most of the committees, as we're going to see, in Massachusetts are known as joint committees. Unlike in the Congress, where the House has its committees and the Senate has its committees, and they don't collaborate, in Massachusetts, the decision was made 150 years ago. Why waste time having the House have its committee hearings and then have them call everybody back and then have the Senate have more committee hearings? Instead, when you go before most committees, there are House members and Senate members present. So they hear it at the same time. They hear testimony. They hear witnesses. They hear advocates. And they look at the petition, the proposal of the law. After the committee holds its hearings, it tweaks the bill, or the proposal, the petition. Actually, once it gets a rule, then it's technically a bill. That's called marking up. The committee begins marking it up. So maybe they don't like the grammar. Maybe they don't like the language. Maybe the reference to a particular section of the Constitution isn't accurate. Whatever. They then make a draft of the bill. The draft then starts off by going to the chamber in which it originates. So we're saying it's the Senate.
So the proposed, marked up, edited, tweaked bill leaves the committee and goes to the Senate for what's called the first reading. Members of the Senate have the ability to look at the proposed bill. They have a gathering, a session, and they're allowed to comment. If money's involved, it's going to go to Ways and Means. Ways and Means is the committee that deals with finances. If no money's involved, then it can go right to the Senate calendar. Because once all the senators make their comments, the bill is further marked up, tweaked, changed, altered, amended. It's put on the second calendar, and then there's a second reading. If the senators have more comments, they're allowed to make more. But after it gets out of the second reading, it's closed. But it's got to go back to the Senate Committee on Bills for a final reading. Make sure everything is right. The bill is locked down. All of the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed. It then gets put on the calendar. It's read before the Senate, and they vote on it. If it passes, it's put on official Senate paper known as engrossment. But we're not done. We're going to run out of time. Shoot. But once the Senate passes it, it goes to the House. And look, it's got to do the whole thing again. If it's read before the House members can have their say on it. If it has money, it's going to go to the House Ways and Means. If not, all of the changes and amendments and proposals has to go on the House calendar for a second meeting. Members can again vote on it again. And once they lock the bill down, it goes to the House Committee on Bills, where everything is finalized, gets on the calendar, goes before the House, and it's voted on again. If the House version is approved, it gets engrossed. Now you have two measures of the bill. You have the Senate version and you have the House version. It then goes before a conference committee. The House version and the Senate version are combined. And just to keep it simple, once they're combined, you have one bill. It gets officially engrossed. It goes to the House for one final vote and signature by the Speaker, then goes to the Senate for one final vote, signature by the House President, and then it goes to the Governor's desk, where the Governor can either sign it or veto. But that's where I'm going to have to leave off. I'll come back and we'll do one quick recap review. Obviously, like I said, this visual is there. It's there on the website. So for Tuesday, please check your email. That's where all the questions were sent. Have that done. That, like this assignment that I collected last class, is for extra credit. So if you didn't do so well on the first exam, this is your chance to boost your average. Okay? All right, we'll have a nice weekend, and we'll see you all on Tuesday.
And I'll have your homework. I forgot them. They were good, by the way. The ones that I read. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
You too.